The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to Kinda Funny's Pixar in Review. That's right, we are ranking and reviewing every Pixar movie. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the producer/seducer, Nick Scarpino.
My dentist is calling me right now because I have an appointment tomorrow. I wonder if they're going to cancel. It's one of those things where it's like you have an exam and then the professor's like, I'm sick. You don't have to take the exam tomorrow. I'm like, fuck yes, no more dent. Because you know what it really is, Tim? Let me tell you. Mm-hmm. You can lie to everyone. You can't lie to your dentist. Tell her every single time that I floss and she goes, I know you don't fucking floss. I know you're not flossing, Joe.
Why do you tell her that you floss if you don't? Like, she can tell.
She asks me, and I don't want to let her down. So I tell her, like, you know what I do say the night before? I floss once, and that way I'm not lying. I go, I floss. I just haven't flossed as much of a volume of flossing as you would like me to floss. And she's like, your fucking gums are just inflamed right now. They're inflamed.
Wouldn't she have more respect for you if you were just like, listen, I don't really floss. I know I'm supposed to, but I just thought I'd be honest with you.
I know that I'm, I know.
My dentist stopped asking. Like, he's smarter than that now.
Yeah, he just doesn't care anymore.
He knows
the
answer to that question. Yeah.
Poor Tim. It's Christmas in May. Joey Noel. Joey, I want to ask you, like, do you think that Nick should spend the rest of tonight learning how to do the floss dance?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
When the dentist asks, like,
I can do it right now.
Nick just goes, yes, I have. I have floss to do it.
Please clear all of this stuff out of my mouth, and I will show you how to floss.
And, of course, 100%. The big dog, Kevin Coelho. How does that make you feel?
I mean, just gross. It makes me feel gross. But when I was watching this movie, I was watching the hot tub in the backyard, and four balloons just were floating in the sky.
Whoa.
Just beyond my house. I got really excited and went to record it, but they were too far away. It just looked like a little like square in the background. But it was really cool. I was like, this means something, Paul. And she was like, shut up. I was like, okay.
That's like some 4D shit, you know, super immersive. Mm-hmm. You got what will Pixar think of next? It's crazy.
Did Cecil start
crazy
talking?
Stuff. No. Getting close.
That would be fucking cool.
This is Pixar in Review, where each and every week we rank and review the Pixar movies. We do in review twice a week. And Kev, are you ready to play the intro for the next in review series that we're going to start this week?
Yeah.
Roll it. Ninja Turtles in Review is happening starting this week. The cast will be all of us, including Joey Noel and Andy Cortez, who is not joining us today
because he's not feeling well.
But he has submitted his ranking and review of Up. So, yeah, exactly. The snakes got to him. It's a real dangerous time. I'm very excited to start.
They bit him right on the Achilles tendon. You know what I mean? And what's funny is he's been bit by snakes so many times, ladies and gentlemen. He's actually impervious to their venom. What happened was they bit him and he jumped and hit his head. Hit his head right on the ceiling.
Classic Andy. So tall. That's a big tall person problem.
Well, Tim, you and I don't understand the baller lifestyle, the basketballers. Mm-hmm. Apparently they can hop twice as high as we can. I don't understand them.
Yeah. That is crazy. A lot of people have been asking what Ninja Turtles movies we're going to be reviewing. And that list is as follows. Ninja Turtles, the 1990 movie. Ninja Turtles, The Secret of the Ooze. Ninja Turtles 3. TMNT, the 2007 CG movie. And then the two Michael Bay movies. The 2014 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And then the 16 mm-hmm. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. Let's get hyped. Let's get excited.
Those are the ones I'm looking forward to the most, by the way.
I'm looking forward to all of them. This is about to be an adventure. You know, Joey Noel, never seen these movies, any of them.
Joey, no, I do know the Ninja Turtle rap because for some reason that music video was a pivotal part of early YouTube for me. But other than that, I don't know anything. I watched the cartoons and stuff like that, but none of the movies.
Would you believe that Vanilla Ice is prominently featured in all of these movies?
All of them?
No, just the one. That was good. Okay. That was a test.
If it only was all of them, that would have been so cool.
That would have been amazing. If he's just, they just cast him as Casey Jones for no reason. Like, he doesn't really fit it.
You can watch this show on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. If you want to listen to it, search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny in Review. Remember, we do it twice a week, so you're going to want to subscribe to that. If you want to get the show ad-free and watch live as we record it, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, Michael G. and Tom Bach did. Thank you both very, very much. Let's get right into it. Today, we are talking about Up, with a runtime of 1 hour, 36 minutes, released on May 29th, 2009, directed by Pete Docter, once again, an American animator, film director, screenwriter, producer, voice actor, and chief creative officer at Pixar. He's best known for directing the Pixar animated movies Monsters, Inc., Up, Inside Out, and Soul. So this motherfucker, he got what it takes.
He gets it.
He's been nominated for 9 Oscars and has won 3 for Best Animated Feature: Up, Inside Out, and Soul, making him the first person in history to win the category 3 times.
Wow.
Music in this one was by Michael, Nick,
Giacchino.
And now we have looked into it. We went to Twitter. Mm-hmm. His Twitter in his bio says, my last name is pronounced Giacchino. So Giacchino. There we go.
There you go.
Giacchino. Michael Giacchino. We will never get it wrong on this show ever again. Isn't that right?
I just went to the first YouTube video that pronounces it. Mm-hmm. And that's never steered us wrong. Bitsy too large.
Exactly. God, I love that so much. It's, but anyway, Michael Giacchino did the music.
And let me tell you, dude, the fucking theme in this is so good. The music in this is so good. This movie is so sad and very depressing, and the music just backs that up perfectly. But they did a great job with this one.
Never budget of 100. 4 notes just obliterated me at any possible time.
Any given time.
So
any time. It's not fair.
A budget of $175 million, a box office of $735.1 million. It was the sixth highest grossing of 2009, the fourth highest grossing Pixar film, the 92nd highest grossing film of all time, and the 24th highest grossing animated film. So yeah, it did real well. In terms of awards, Up won 2 awards at the 82nd Academy Awards, 1 for Best Animated Feature and for Best Original Score. So well deserved. It's the 2nd of 3 animated features to have been nominated for Best Picture, following Beauty and the Beast and Toy Story 3, but did not get that. It was also nominated for Best Picture, Original Screenplay, and Sound Editing, which it did not win. Let's start it off. Kevin Coelho, what did you think about Up?
I think it should have won the sound editing. This movie sounded beautiful, you know what I mean? Everything about this movie is so good. Ah, I love this movie. The first, 5 minutes can go straight to hell for grabbing at my heart and squeezing it until I'm just sitting there like a sad little prune, you know, with all my heart juice out. Anyways, I like it a lot.
Joey?
This movie's incredible. It's one that I don't watch a ton because it is so, emotionally draining in a good way. The music, the way that the first 5 minutes, that opening scene is like a masterclass in storytelling with just the way that they did the scenes and the music and everything. It's incredible. And this is one of 2 Pixar movies that makes me cry every time I watch it. And this is the one that I feel like I have the hardest time recovering from because they just sprinkle in enough throughout the movie where it's a constant emotional event, but I love it. And I think all of it is so, I don't know, I love it. That's all I got.
Nick.
Right there with everyone else, right? This one is the one that of the Pixar movies that I was actually dreading watching because it hits so hard on so many, so many different levels throughout the film. Having said all of that, I don't, plot wise, I think this is the most very, very simplistic of all of the Pixar movies. And so I'm interested to see where it ranks against some of the more complex of the movies, especially since this is one of those that I say this almost every week, but I'm on paper this shouldn't work. It does though. It's a really old man and a kid, and I'm who is the audience? And the main character is the old man. I'm how did you get everyone to sympathize with the character that's not the target audience for this? It's so well done. And the movie's beautifully animated. But I do wonder where it's going to hit on the list, though, how high up it'll be.
I hope that it is very high, because to me, this is pretty much as close to a perfect movie as you can get. It's more Pixar magic. And I think that when it comes to the Pixar movies we've been watching so far, this is kind of just like, hey, we've done it all before. We're going to do it again, but kind of just the good parts. And it is going to be extremely tight and extremely focused. And I really appreciate that, especially after watching WALL-E last week, where that kind of felt like a short film idea that they turned into a feature length. I really like how this movie kind of does a flip of that, where the first 7 minutes are a standalone short film to itself, where you kind of get a lot out of that, really a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions, a lot of character, themes, tones, undertones, all that stuff there. But then you get the rest of the movie that doesn't just kind of feel like they stretch the short story, but they kind of use that as like a thesis to go forward. And while I agree with Nick that the plot is simple, and I think that in terms of comedy, this movie doesn't make me like laugh out loud throughout it. It always
doesn't get
consistent.
You?
No, what I'm saying is, like, it's not necessarily as funny as a Monsters
Inc. Oh, no, it's like not a comedy.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be. I think that the comedy works. There's never a thing where I'm, like, rolling my eyes or anything. It's just consistent throughout, and at the end of the day, it does everything it's setting out to do very well, which is make you feel things, make you feel a multitude of things. Because, you know, looking at that beginning bit, like, obviously she dies, like that is so sad, so scary, but even dealing with the pregnancy stuff, it's like there's so much there. And again, as we've been watching these week to week, and I'm so happy we're doing Pixar Interview in particular, because I never realized that there is this Pixar magic. There is a thing that is inherently Pixar throughout these movies, where every single like theme and character relationship all work together to back each other up to create something more than just individual dope moments. And I think that Up does a great job of, just like Finding Nemo had that moment where what the dad learned and what Nemo learned, they all had to work together to do it at once, for all the main characters to overcome their issues. With Up, especially when you get to the end and you have him being Russell's dad, which we saw a million miles away, right? We knew that was going to happen. But did we see him giving the grape soda pin? I did.
Oh, that fucking guts me every single time. That guts me every single time.
Anytime you're like, I know what they're doing with this, they take it that one step further. And I think that is really what makes Up extremely, extremely special to me.
Yeah.
Andy wrote in and said, Pixar delivers another banger. Make this a 2D anime, and it's immediately going to be a top-tier Ghibli movie. This intro is quite possibly the most heartbreaking thing I've ever seen. I love the unconventional character designs. Was Charles Muntz 100 to 130 years old? It's a big question that I had as well.
Probably.
And shout out to the animators who perfectly recreated a golden retriever. Doug is amazing. And that's the thing. The cast of characters, again, that's a tentpole of a Pixar movie. And, oh, man, they got him in spades in this one for sure. Including Kevin the bird.
Oh, Kevin the bird.
The female bird. Kevin the female bird.
The best thing ever. I think, Tim, you know, you really can't say enough about that special sauce that Pixar has. And especially coming off of, like, we talked about The Mitchells versus the Machines, which is, to me, like, a good movie, but the complete antithesis of what Pixar is able to do here, even in those first 5 minutes, where they're just telling you such a complicated and complexly emotional story, and they're just mostly just using imagery and music with it. And it's all just a masterclass of how to pull that emotion out of people and how to make them feel and just really, like, relate that to every aspect of your own life. And I remember watching this specifically with when I was in the theaters, Dee and I went and saw it, and I just remember, like, holding her hand so hard when after this first part, and just taking a look at my life and being like, Jesus God, like, everything's, you got to hold on to the things that are special to you.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's really backed up too with just every single moment in that intro, besides the big bits, like besides the death and the really sad parts, but even him, the wheel of the car, the tire popping, right? Having to break the thing, and then him being in the hospital, break the thing. It's like, that's just so real. And it took 2 seconds explain so much to us, for us to understand that life, these people are living a life together.
Yeah.
And life gets in the way of your plans of the adventure and what you're trying to do. And there's just so much great imagery in this movie that just feels believable and realistic.
Yeah.
And that is in a movie where they attach balloons to a house and make it fucking fly away.
Yeah.
But somehow Pixar can manage that balance, because them having the adventure book and her having that thing of just like all the adventures we're gonna do and leaving it blank, and then when he looks at it after she dies and it's not blank, I'm tearing up right now. Are you kidding
fucking
me?
So good.
Like, that is so good. It's like movies shouldn't be that good. They shouldn't be allowed to be that perfectly great where it's like he gets to go on this adventure, that he does it, he gets the house there, but that wasn't really what it was about. There was all this other stuff. Oh,
it's about finding the new adventure. My God. It was so nice.
Let's talk about the adventure, Nick. Let's get to the plot. I don't have a song, so Joey, hit it.
It's time for the plot.
Yes.
That was great.
See, it has nothing to do with Pixar, but...
See, Andy, yeah, but you know what it had to do with? Tim threw to you, and you just came up with something. Unlike Andy, who just... I'm going to get the ball, Kevin. Nope, I dropped it. I fumbled the rock. Ladies and gentlemen, let me take you through the emotional roller coaster that is up. And of course, Tim, I always pulled the quote of the movie, and in this one, you got to go with squirrel, which is the funniest fucking thing anyone's ever done. That got me... so hard the first time Doug did it in the theater. I was like, you know what? Give him the Academy Award. Give it to him. Best story, best writing, best movie ever made. We start with a newsreel of Spotlight on Adventure featuring Charles Muntz and his ship, the Spirit of Adventure, who just completed a year-long journey to the Lost World. Muntz has a dog, too, and makes them do cool shit. And he says, adventure is out there. Of course, watching in the theaters of this newsreel is a young Carl. He's watching in awe as Muntz reveals a new monster he found in the Paradise Falls. But other scientists call bullshit on that. They think he made it up. So he goes, you know what? I'll prove you all wrong. I'm going back to Paradise Falls to clear my good name. On the walk home, Carl is fantasizing about being Charles Muntz. He's got a little balloon. And I love all the balloon energy and how they use that throughout this whole movie. It's very cool thematically. He's walking with it. It says Spirit of Adventure as well on it. And he's fantasizing about being Muntz, but his flights of fancy are interrupted by Ellie, who has an imagination of her own. He goes in to see what she's doing, and she's piloting her own Spirit of Adventure up there, and she's got high energy, and he is just completely smitten with her and completely overwhelmed by how cool she is. Of course, when Ellie spots him, he lets go of his balloon, which is cool. She tells him he's in the club now and pins that grape soda bottle cap onto his chest. And then she's like, let's go up and get your balloon. I know where it is. And he immediately goes up there and she's like, get out there on the ledge. It's not going to be a problem. And he immediately just falls through and breaks his arm.
Hilarious.
So great. Good. Because like no one expects that, right? Like,
no, you think like, he's going to get it.
And it's just the way they shoot it where he's just like, whoop. And it's so comic or cartoon and he's just gone. And it cuts to the ambulance outside. Love it.
Cuts the ambulance. And then, of course, though, later that night, she sneaks into his room and she gives him the balloon back, right? And then she shows him the adventure book. But when Ellie gets big, she says, when I'm going to get big, I'm going to head straight to Paradise Falls. I'm never going to move. She's going to move her clubhouse and park it right next to the falls. Then she's going to fill up the rest of the empty pages in her book with adventures. But she doesn't know how to get there until Carl looks up at his toy blimp. And she says, she makes him swear. She's like, cool, we'll take a blimp there. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make this thing float. And you have to swear one day that you'll go there with me. You'll take me there. And he crosses his heart and he swears. Of course, before she leaves, she yells back, you don't talk very much. I like you. And then bounces out the window.
Is this around the scene where she takes the thing off and her hair just goes, poof, pah.
Yeah, hilarious.
Love it.
That was like, yeah.
Little kids are fucking funny, man. And it's been a rarity to really kind of get a lot of human characters so far in the Pixar movies, especially them kind of being the main focus. Mm-hmm. I think Incredibles is the only example so far. And seeing them together immediately, I'm just like, I believe in you just as much as I believed in any of these Pixar characters that preceded you.
And then it starts. The single most, I will say, romantic and beautiful and saddest 5 minutes of your life. And I'm going to try to get through this without tearing up or crying. Carl and Ellie get married and paint their house colors that I'm pretty sure would piss off the homeowners association.
The families, when it cuts to his family and they're all sitting there bored, like, you know, being super quiet, and it cuts to her family and they're rowdy and like having fights in the crowd. And like, that's just the duality of where they come from. I love it.
We cut over to what Carl does for a living. He sells balloons at the zoo where Ellie works, and they look at clouds together and dream of babies. But then this is where we take a little bit of a turn for the sadness. We see Ellie, they're painting the room and they're getting the baby's room ready. And then we cut to the hospital where she has had a miscarriage. So instead, they start a jar to start saving money for their trip to Paradise Falls. But alas, life keeps getting in the way. Until one day,
thing I want to mention there of this recap. There is the moment after it's clear that like she's been informed that like she can't have kids, and she's just sitting in the in the
outside
lawn. Yeah, outside, and the wind is blowing through her hair. And he comes up to her. That is, I think, one of the most beautiful moments in animations that I've ever experienced, where there's so much, so much happening in that scene with the two people. And I just want to shout out to that moment because it is fucking so powerful. And I feel like it, because of the moments that are coming very soon, like I think it's overlooked. Mm-hmm. That's all.
No, I agree. I think that's I feel like the whole thing leading up to that, obviously, like the scene of them in the hospital is really sad too. But to see her just like looking outside and like, I'm going to start crying, like all the things going on in her head and stuff like that. It's just like a lot.
It's really beautifully done. I wrote in here that she had miscarriage. I'm sorry, but Kevin, I think you nailed that. I think she just got the news that she can't have kids. But of course, then they start the tip jar. But life keeps getting in the way until one day they find themselves very old. And they never really got around to going to Paradise Falls, even though they put a nice mural of it above their chimney. So Carl says, you know what? We're going to do it. He goes out and he buys two plane tickets and then gets the plans together, plans a fucking picnic. But man, they reach back into your gut, Kevin, and they pull it out because Ellie falls ill and Carl brings her to a balloon to the hospital. And then
fucking fuck.
And then he brings more balloons to her funeral. And that is the saddest fucking thing. I'm going to get it together.
Yeah, here we are. Here we
congratulations, Pixar.
Just talking about it.
Pixar.
Congratulations. You should have called this movie Downer.
What a way to start. What a way to start. Like this.
My God. And then
did
he wakes
I
up
see
the next
this
day.
In theaters?
Yeah, I did. I was fucking bawling
because
when this happened.
I remember going and like they don't allude to any of that stuff in the trailers. And I just remember being there and all of us sitting there like, what just happened to us? And like what is this movie? And not being able to function.
I remember seeing it in theaters and yeah, every fucking person was crying. And there was one like super annoying dude, as there usually is, that's like yelling and screaming, trying to be funny. And when the baby thing happened, like when you watch it the first time, like it could be a lot, but he screamed out. He was like, I thought they were going to kill her. Like, thank God. And it just kept going. And like seconds later, he goes, oh, hell no. And you just hear him crying too. And it like definitely ruined the scene. Definitely ruined it. But yeah. It couldn't because everyone was
it
was
so
already
fucking
there.
Good. Carl wakes up. I mean, I guess some days later, we're not quite sure, and takes his very slow mechanical chair downstairs. And those things always terrify me because I think there was a Tales from the Crypt or one of those. Maybe it was Gremlins where the Gremlins attack the old person on the chair and then they make it go crazy and then they shoot her out of the top story. From that point, I've just been scared of him. Then he pins on his Adventure Club pin, the grape soda pin that Ellie gave him all those years ago, and goes outside to check the mail. And what do we see all around him? Well, the world's moved on, and there's a massive, massive building development that's happening all around him, and he is the one holdout. And man, the people who are planning this are not happy about it. One of the construction workers, voiced by
John Ratzenberger. It's the Ratzenberger watch, baby.
So good to see him in here.
Yeah, it comes over and tells him, he's like, listen, my boss really wants you out of here. He'll double the price. But Carl tells his boss to go take a bath, which I think is like the best way to tell someone to fuck themselves. Tell your boss to go take a bath. Later that day, Carl gets a knock on the door from Russell, who is a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. He offers Carl assistance. He wants to give Carl assistance. Doing anything. Carl, I'll give you assistance crossing the street. Hell, I'll give you assistance crossing your porch. I just got to get this pin to assist the elders. But Russell won't take no for an answer. He's like, I got one pin left until I become a senior wilderness explorer. I'm missing the assistant elderly person pin. Old man, you got to let me help you do something. But Carl tells him, he's like, fine, I need help catching a snipe, which is essentially a wild goose chase. He sends him out of his way and he says, you got to clap your hands and go catch this snipe. Outside, a construction worker accidentally knocks down the mailbox that he and Ellie put up when they first moved in. And Carl tells him to leave it alone and tries to get out of his hands, but the guy wants to fix it and a struggle ensues. And Carl ends up getting frustrated and knocking the guy over his head with his walker and putting it on his ass. Now, I tell you this, if you let an old man knock you on your ass, you just and the cops come, they should haul you away. That's you. That's your bad. That's what you did that. OK, you don't understand. Don't mess with the old man's. Don't mess with my mailbox. What I'm saying, kids, you come mess with my mailbox. I'm going to hit you with that four. And it wasn't even a normal walker. It was like the claw walker, Kevin. That's like, I'm serious about this walker. Yeah, it's much more stable.
I know, and it's just like it still has the same mailbox that they had that they made together.
With the handprints. Like,
don't touch it. Like, I know.
Did anyone like? I feel like everyone must have lost their shit when the tractor starts hitting it. Oh, where yeah. It's like
how do we get this to stop?
Stop this, please. Just roll the credits. Let it end somewhat happier.
No, I can't take this much emotional torture.
I feel like this movie, a perfect example of why we all love it so much, is that, of course, it has that opening scene, but it just keeps going, keeps adding layers and layers that are more than just a man that loved his wife lost his wife. There's more than that. Like, having this whole thing of it being this holdout, him holding on to his house and everything around it changing, people, like, literally doing anything they can to take it from him, and then having him have this moment of accidentally hurting this other man. But then it's like, okay, how is this old man going to be treated? Not well. Immediately. Pixar doesn't need to explain all that to us. It's just kind of like, we're going to have the next scene be dude's coming to take him away. And it's just like, but fuck.
Even before that, the next cut is immediately the guy that he just insulted on the phone kind of looking, and you can see, oh, what does he do? He touches the fence post. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about that where you're like, oh, he got
I've
you.
Got him.
Like, that's yeah, it. That's all you like, need. He's that's got
all we need guy. To see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, he gets a court order and is forcing him into the Shady Oaks retirement home. And if you've seen the movie I Care a Lot, this should terrify you.
Oh, my God. I was literally thinking about that as I was watching it. Yeah. Terrifying, and just context for how sad it is that they can force you to do that. And like, you don't really at that age, like, you don't necessarily you have a ton of say if you don't have somebody around to like vouch for you or take care of you or anything like that.
It's really sad.
It's like scary.
It's very scary. And hey, if you have a grandparent still living, maybe go visit them before some asshole knocks their fucking mailbox over and they put them in Shady Oaks, which is the equivalent to old folks jail. Carl looks at Ellie's old adventure book, and then the mural they painted of paradise falls above their mantle, and he re-ups his pledge to Ellie by crossing his heart again. The next morning, orderlies show up to Shady Oaks, and they're kind of dicks, to come get him. But he has a surprise for them and everyone in the neighborhood. He's rigged the old place with thousands of balloons, which he ignites and lifts his house high into the air. And what a beautiful scene, right? That's the first thing we see is, right, it goes up into the air. And again, another great touch for Pixar. It goes up in the air. First thing we see is a girl, like a little girl in her house. And she looks at it through the window and runs through the window and like watches it. And it's like, just a great, you know, and then we see adults, and we see other people seeing it, but we just see that wonderment from her perspective first. And I thought that was really cool. He goes high into the sky. of course, he laughs as he smashes the orderly's car, which is funny. And then he and his house float up. He releases sails and charts his course to Paradise Fall.
It's magical.
Yeah, yep. Really beautifully done. I also love just the design of the house and how all of the balloons are tied into his fireplace. So he can cut them when he needs to go down and like do all that stuff, which is cool. Again, hot air balloons, though, terrifying. Don't go in them.
Absurd that it's being held to the fireplace. That just makes no goddamn sense. Think of the science level of Pixar.
Like structurally.
Yeah. The fireplace? That thing is just placed in the fire. No, it's not.
The house. I don't know, man.
And maybe it's bolted down to one of the like beams underneath the house, but like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. Absurd.
Where would you put it, Kevin? If you had to tie a bunch of balloons to your house, where would you tie them to?
I mean, it'd be impossible. But yeah, the beams underneath it. You have no imagination. The floor joist, maybe.
Yeah, you're going to want to bolt that into the floor.
Yeah,
for sure.
cut in some key points, connect it down to the floor joist. I've thought a lot about it. Maybe get some large metal anchors, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do you need to set off the metal anchors?
Oh, billions. Yeah, you're going to need millions upon millions of balloons.
Yeah. Of course, Carl takes a moment to relax, but his silence is broken when somebody knocks at the door. When he opens it, he finds Russell stapled to his deck. He's like, I found the snipe and chased it under your deck, but the snipe had a long tail and looked a little bit more like a mouse. And then he goes, let me in. And Carl goes, no. And then just slams the door. And I was like, that's a pro move. You know what? When you hit 80, 75, maybe, you can just do whatever you want. You can fart. My grandma, Amarnalia, I'll never forget, used to tuck me in, and then she'd just fart on her way over to my brother's room. And we thought it was the funniest thing. She would just do the fart walk. And I was like, I'm pretty sure she knows what she's doing, Kevin, and just doesn't give a fuck. Because when you're 85 years old, you fart walk, you do what you want to do.
You can't hear it, you know, so you assume they can't hear it.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. It sounded like Slash goddamn Harley don't Davidson care. Going down the hallway. Oh, man.
Between this break scene, ass
for the best of them.
And the one at the very beginning where they meet, just the way that they've like, they build Russell as a character of just like him reading off the paper and like being so like goal focused. Like, I have this thing I want to do and I'm going to do it. And you are just the next person on my list to figure out if you can help me with this. Like, he's just so earnest, and I love
also
him.
Also, like, the low-key reasoning behind him wanting to get that pen, right, is that he hopes that it'll be the time that his dad shows back up, which is super sad.
Again, is the dad off so with the new family?
The dad is off with with Phyllis and the new
Phyllis
family.
Phyllis is not my mom. It's like,
You're like, And then this is a realization because Carl's, like, been around. He's like, fuck. I understand what's happening here, and it's super sad. Anyway, he eventually lets Russell in, and Russell does what all kids do. He immediately starts touching things and fucking everything up. So he tries to then lower Russell down to the city below using bed sheets and accidentally drops him. And I was like, whoa. And then it comes back and he goes, no, that's not going to work. He's just
fucking thinking about
what a good, don't try that. That's not what you're going to do.
Relentless.
Yeah.
Relentless and just keeping our interest of just like, are we just going to go? They've never done that in a Pixar movie before, of like a fake aside, you know, some Family Guy style shit.
Hilarious. Instead, of course, he goes to the fireplace, start cutting some of the balloons to let some of the air out so he can land and get the kid out. But a massive storm quickly engulfs them and starts knocking everything around. Carl manages, of course, to save some of the things, one of which is the picture of Ellie that he has on the wall. He saves it right before it smashes to the ground. The next morning, Russell wakes Carl up to tell him, he's like, hey, man, I steered the house while you took a nap. And he's like, you did? He goes, yeah, I used this cool Wilderness Explorer GPS thing that my dad gave me back in the day that I can use anywhere. We're over South America right now. He says, with this baby, we'll never get lost. And then he immediately drops it out the window and loses it. Carl cuts more balloons so they can drop down and put Russell on a bus. And Russell has a great line here where he's like, man, that's going to be a lot of, what do they call it? A lot of like other buses. I can't
transfers. Now, transfers.
Transfers. Like, that's going to be a lot of transfers. Of course, when they descend, they hit ground way too soon and bounce out of the house. Carl grabs onto the hose, which is going to be a staple of this whole movie, and Russell grabs onto him, and together they grab the house right before it goes off the cliff, and they teeter on and they bring it back down. When the fog clears, of course, Carl sees the massive waterfall and telltale rock formation of Paradise Falls. They've made it, but Russell can't climb back up to the house, so he gets another idea. We could walk your house to the falls like a parade balloon. So off they go. We're going to walk to the falls. And so Carl lays out the ground rules here. And I got to be honest, Tim, I respect this. We're going to walk to the falls quickly and quietly with no rap music or flash dancing. We have 3 days at best before the helium leaks out of the balloons. Flash dancing is what he said.
I love it.
It's such a fucking me thing to say.
It is. No, that's great. I really, really love this whole setup to this scene, because a moment that I think that we first saw in Cars was the reveal of a larger than life space. And like, I think we had a couple of them in Cars. We get when we first see the waterfall, but then also when we see Radiator Springs kind of light up at night with the neon and all that stuff. It's very like, whoa, this is amazing. This is something special. Seeing Paradise Falls like through the clouds as it kind of like breaks open, and we see it, and then throughout the movie we get kind of different variations of it. Love it.
Very well done. So they set off, and we cut to a mysterious creature.
Where he also is like, my mom loves that game, or sat back in the house. I don't remember which one gives you a little glimpse into like, oh, this is how he is with everyone, and everyone in his life has had to figure out how to like manage him.
Yeah, it's kids are like that, you know what I mean? They're all annoying and awful.
We cut over to a mysterious creature running through the jungle, being hunted by a pack of dogs with strange collars on. But the creature proves too shifty to be caught, and they're chased off when a high-pitched squeal from Carl's hearing aid comes close. Russell makes them stop so he can take a poop, but can't remember if he's supposed to dig the hole before or after. And then he was like, hey, spoilers, you're supposed to dig it before. When he's done, he spots what he thinks are snipe tracks, so he follows them to a dead end of the bush, thinking that his journey's over. He takes a moment to eat a chocolate bar, which the snipe helps himself to. And then he brings the snipe back to Carl, and when Carl turns around, it's not a snipe at all. It is a big old majestic bird creature that is super fond of Russell and refuses to leave. So Russell names the incredibly loud, chocolate-loving creature that just loves being around everyone and just wants you to know that he's there, Kevin.
pathetic attempt to insult me. Fuck you, Nick. I'll just directly say to your face, you old man.
It's the only one. I threw it in there. It's an obvious joke. It's an easy joke. I love it. And it follows them around until they walk into what they think is a man, but is really a rock formation, voiced by the greatest character in this movie, Doug the Dog. Spelled D-U-G, by the way. That's how the Doug is spelled. Great. And Doug says the following. Hi there. Yeah?
D-U-G. Isn't that how it's always spelled?
There's an O there usually.
Oh, D-U-G. All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My brain ate the O. No worries.
Doug the Dog.
My brain ate the O. He is a Kevin. We got a Kevin here. Where is he? He's up there somewhere.
Doug says the following. Hi there. My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you. My master made me this collar. He is a good and smart master, and he made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel.
Fuck.
Everything about this.
Maybe the best introduction to a squirrel. Side character.
The squirrel with the point is just...
But I just
you've never had a dog,
and I love you.
And I love you. It's the perfect thing. That's what a dog would say. Yeah.
Especially perfect. A golden retriever, where it's just like... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All no thoughts. No thoughts.
Thoughts. All love. Dude, and squirrels. I mean,
the way they animated the three main good characters, where we have, like, you know, Fred just kind of being this, like, the old dude, the way he's shaped, the way he's like so square and rectangle all the time, and like just everything he does. I love that he's so slow that when they animate him moving quickly, it feels like character development. Motion feels like character development. It feels like they earn shit. And then when we get Doug and Russell, they just are both so funny looking that everything they do is enhanced by their the visual aesthetic of the whole thing, right? But Doug, they just nailed that's a dog. He's going to talk like a dog. He's going to move like a dog. Because dogs are fucking weird.
They are incredibly weird, and we love them. They're man's best friend. Doug was sent out to find a bird on a very special mission, which immediately finds him and tracks him, and I think they become best friends. So the bird, like, tackles him, and then they're just best friends. Doug wants the bird to be his prisoner so he can take it back to his camp as his prisoner for his master. There's a moment here also where Russell's like, you got a funny collar on. He starts playing with the dial on his collar, and it changes the languages. Genius. I say this. Hey, Muntz, you've developed an incredibly important tool. You can make billions off of this. Screw the bird. Come back and just make that dollars, dog.
His name.
What I would give to be able to talk to dogs.
Oh, God.
I want it.
I feel like Greg Miller brought up the most amazing thing, where he's like, if a dog tried to talk to me, it would be like, hey, you know, every time I'm asking for stuff, it's because I want the food off the table. And it's like, you have to look at the dog and be like, I know you can't have it. And they're not going to understand. They're just sit there and be heartbroken. And be like, wait, you knew the whole time?
That's going to be, that is also going to be a fleeting thought. And then they're going to get distracted by something else. So it's
so you're going to get that same question over and over again. Or that same conversation.
But then you just turn it to a different language. And then it's fine.
Then it's just a cute little animal speaking, what?
German or Portugal. Or Japanese. At one point, he was second Japanese, which is hilarious.
Yeah,
I think you can Portuguese.
Portuguese.
You're right. Yes. Portuguese. Yeah, I'm sorry. My brain all over the place.
Kevin's in that Kevin mood, you know?
Kevin's in Kevin mood. The other dogs, of course, we get introduced to the other dogs, Alpha, Gamma, and Beta. The Alpha, of course, collar is malfunctioning, so he has a very high-pitched noise. We get another squirrel joke here, and I love it.
Yeah, went on too long. For a second, and then tapped it, and then, it would have been fine. I felt like this is...
Squirrel joke or the high-pitched voice?
The high-pitched voice.
Oh, I love the high-pitched voice with a Doberman.
But I also love how they write Alpha.
Yeah, I love how they wrote him. I don't like them having the high-pitched voice for a long time and then giving him a new voice and it being a low voice. Like, if you're going to change it, I feel like there should have been a second joke there or just commit to this is his voice. And the whole language changing on Doug, I was like, this felt like a missed opportunity in terms of comedy. But that's subjective.
They talk crap about Doug, and it turns out Alpha sent him on a fool's errand. But when they call him, Doug tells him that he has the bird, and I'm with a small mailman. Yes, Kevin.
So there is a short, like a 5-minute short.
Doug's adventure or whatever, or Doug's special mission or whatever it is.
And
yeah,
it's them like sending him on the mission, and
so he goes. They tell him to watch a rock. Fucking assholes.
He goes and he does a bunch of little fucked up things, and at the end, it ends up in the him walking in the misty place, right where they first meet him. It's a fun little add-on. I like the
You know what's funny, Kev? I started watching that yesterday, and I was like, I wonder if this was actually part of the script, and they just chose to cut it out. Because you think that they could have shown that, but obviously the reveal of the dogs talking was super, like, you wanted to see the dogs first, so it didn't make sense. I wonder if they rendered it all, like, wrote it and was like, hey, we can't use this, but we got a solid, like, 5 minutes where if we just flesh a little bit out, it could work.
I feel like it's definitely worth a watch. Like, I just get the feeling that it was made afterwards for, like, some, like, a DVD bonus where they're like, hey, we have all, like, shot out, or not shot out, but, like, you know, planned out.
Storyboarded out.
It would only take
some
dude, like, 2 weeks to do it.
One guy is like, I got all the models. I'll figure out how Cinema 4D works. Let's see. They talk crap about, Carl uses a ball from his walker and some of Russell's candy to get rid of what he thinks is getting rid of Doug and Kevin, respectively. And then he takes off up the hill. But when they get there and they have a seat, it's a great shot, too, where he looks over and the camera just pans over and Doug's there. And then he looks over the other way and Kevin's there. And he's like, fuck, I didn't get rid of anyone.
This scene where he threw the things in the plants to get rid of them, Gia had never seen this movie before. Gia was so offended. She thought that he was trying to kill Doug with the chocolate, because dogs can't eat chocolate. And I was like, no, they're giving it to the bird. The bird likes the chocolate. She was like, oh, yeah, I am.
That's hilarious. Like, come here, eat a little bit more. And then Russell's like, my Doug has a tummy ache. And he's like, Doug's going to the night land.
Oh my God. Do we need more tragedy? Like,
yeah, Nick, we don't need more tragedy.
And also, big birds taste good.
And with anyway, that, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Kinda Funny Reactions. It's our show that we do weekly, sometimes multiple times a week, covering, reviewing, recapping, reacting to the latest in movie and TV, whether it's a movie trailer, a new episode of Star Wars The Bad Batch, which episode 1 and 2 right now, we have our thoughts over there. If you want any of the MCU shows, Falcon and Winter Soldier, WandaVision, all that stuff, it's there. We were even doing some movies like The Mitchells versus The Machines, which is out on Netflix now, and you can catch our thoughts on Kind of Funny Reactions, a show you can get on youtube.com/kindoffunny or podcast services. Search for Kind of Funny Reactions. Please subscribe. Please leave good reviews. Please thumbs up, 5 stars, all the good stuff. 10 out of 10. It's all good stuff that helps us a lot, the algorithms and whatnot. But Kind of Funny Reactions is something that we want to grow and we want to push further. And the more people watching and listening, the more things we'll react to. That's just kind of how it works. We've been doing the Bad Batch for Star Wars. I'm not sure if we're going to do it weekly. If the reaction is there, we will. So if that sounds like something you're into, please check it out. But we're hoping to do a lot more reviews and stuff going forward. So please subscribe to that. Or if YouTube's more your thing, youtube.com/kindoffunny. Kind of Funny Reactions, it's a damn good time. Back to it.
Of course, Doug gives him back his now very slimy ball. He's like, crap, we're stuck with these guys. It rains, so Russell tries to make Carl a tent and ends up launching it into the night sky. He confesses to Carl, he's never actually built a tent before. And Carl's like, wait, you've never been camping? And he goes, no, never outside. And he goes, well, he asks him, why don't you just ask your dad to show you? But it turns out his dad lives with a new family in Phyllis. But he promised he'd come to the ceremony to pin on his final badge. Before he goes to sleep, he asks Carl to promise he won't leave Kevin because he might be in danger. Carl crosses his heart and then looks up at the old house to ask, what have I gotten myself into, Ellie? The next morning, he spots more balloons dying, and Kevin roots through their food so he can provide for his babies that we hear calling off into the distance. But Carl sends Kevin away despite his promise, since the house has lost enough time already. Alpha and the gang catch up, but Kevin is nowhere to be seen, so Alpha takes Carl and Russell prisoner instead as Kevin hides out on the roof of the house. Doug follows them, dejected. When they get to the base of the falls, a massive pack of dogs surround them. Bunce, now very, very old, calls them off and orders them to stay. He spots their house and laughs his ass off. They're not after his bird after all. This is all just a big old misunderstanding. Carl recognizes Bunce immediately from the adventure reels that he saw when he was a kid and freaks out. He says, my wife and I were your biggest fans. So Bunce tells the dogs that Carl and Russell are no longer intruders, and the dogs cry out in delight, I like you temporarily. they head in to find Munce's old ship, the Spirit of Adventure, still intact and very much functioning. Meanwhile, the rest of the dogs put Doug in what they call the Cone of Shame. And I will forever refer to this as the Cone of Shame now, which is just one of those medicated cones that you put around dogs when they have to have some sort of operation. Two dogs try to pour them champagne and completely miss. And this is the funniest part of this whole fucking movie. Did you guys catch this part? Yeah. Like, the dog brings out a tray and the other dog tries to pour the champagne and it just goes everywhere but the things.
No, my favorite though is as the scene continues, they walk through and then you see the dog with the brush in his mouth, like cleaning the bone. And the moment they walk by, he drops it and starts licking the bone. Yeah.
Let's see. Munz is still on the hunt for the bird, the creature that ruined his reputation. He's been trying for years to capture Kevin, but the bird is impossible to find. He lives in that foggy area and every time they go in, they can't get him. So he's got to figure it out. But then Russell lets us slip that, hey, he's like, I know this bird. We trained Kevin to follow them with chocolate. And then Munz immediately turns on them. Turns out he has been killing every single person who's come through there, including some map surveyors and some explorers and people. I don't even know what the fuck he's talking about when he talks about this bird. But he doesn't trust him. And now he doesn't trust Russell or Carl.
What a weird dark turn for this character.
Yeah, he goes from so cool to like murderous so fast.
It make him cool that everyone he kills, he collects their helmet and goggles?
It's kind of cool.
It does make him his trophies. Cooler, yeah.
Russell lets it slip that Kevin's cries distract Munz, allowing Russell and Carl to escape back to the house. Doug helps them find their way out, and Kevin picks them up on the way to speed things up as Munz's dogs nip at their heels. Alpha gets sweaty with Doug and throws Doug off the cliff, breaking the cone of shame as Russell and Carl jump from rock to rock, finally doing a big jump floating over the river and landing on the other side. Most of the dogs try to follow him over, but they fall into the river. Unfortunately, Kevin breaks her leg in the process. She calls out to her children, and Russell tries to bandage her wound, but it's too severe. So he asks Carl to help, and the old man reluctantly agrees. They put Kevin on the porch, and they set out to walk her back to her family with the house in tow. While they walk, Russell tells him a story about how his father used to come to all of his sweat lodge meetings, and then they would get ice cream at Fenton's and sit on the curb to count cars, blue and red cars. Says, it might sound boring, but it's the boring stuff I remember. And Carl's just like, Jesus,
never emotions. Dagger.
Just, again, yeah, Jesus, like, just kid. Dialogue that backs up a fantastic fucking motion picture. Mm-hmm.
They spot Kevin's home and help the bird back to his family, but Munz catches up to them because he used the locator on Doug's collar to find him, and he shoots a net around Kevin. He orders Carl and Russell to get away from the bird, and then he lights the house on fire as a distraction, which does its trick, so he can take Kevin back to his ship. Carl puts out the fire, but Russell is super sad that he gave Kevin away, and of course, at this point, Carl's had enough and screams at him, I didn't ask for any of this. Then he throws shade at Doug and calls him a bad dog, which makes Doug walk away with his tail between his legs. That's heartbreaking.
All right, fuck you. We didn't need this. That broke my soul. Mm-hmm. And 10 seconds ago when we see the dog fight and there's the bit of all the dogs run past Doug, but then Alpha coming in, throwing him off. The way that was animated felt offensively graphic to me, where I was like, do not do this. I was like, Moose, look away. Don't watch this.
Moose is like, they're hurting dogs.
A bad dog. No, you're a good dog, Doug.
Tim just holds Moose and he's like, it's not real. They're not real. You're a good dog. You're a good dog. Carl sets off on his own and says, I'm going to make it to Paradise Falls with or without you, kid. They finally reach the falls as the house runs out of air and sets down with a thud. Russell throws his sash and he looks over and says, you know what? I've had enough, old man. Throws that sash of his with all the pins on the ground and tells Carl, I don't want it anymore. Carl heads into his house to straighten up. He sits down next to Ellie's chair. At this point, Russell says, I'm going to go after Kevin. I'm going to help him out, whether you help me or not. Carl heads into his house. He's like, good riddance. Heads into his house, straighten up. He sits down next to Ellie's chair and puts the picture of the house that she had drawn on the falls in their adventure book. But as he thumbs through, he gets to the final page that he thought didn't have anything past. This is stuff I'm going to do, and realizes finally that Ellie is gone. And then he goes to shut the book, but sees there's something on the next page. And as he starts thumbing through, it turns out she's been filling this book her entire life with all of the amazing photos from their life together. And their adventure continued after all. On the final page, Carl finds a picture of him and Ellie sitting in their chairs, the very same chairs that he is sitting in right now. And there's a little inscription at the bottom of it that says, thanks for the adventures. Now go have a new one, Ellie.
So beautiful.
So good.
This might be the most I've cried on any piece of Kind of Funny content ever.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Oh.
And then Carl looks over at Ellie's chair and he finds Russell's explorer sash sitting there. And he knows he's been a giant a-hole. But when he goes outside to find Russell, the boy has taken off with some of the balloons and says, I'm going to go help Kevin, even if you won't. Carl tries to move the house, but it won't budge.
Shout outs to like their go to thing being like, I'm taking balloons and I'm taking off. And he's got the blower. And it's just like,
he's got the leaf blower.
Yeah. It's like, all right, this fucking guy work. Thought about it for a minute and he got it.
Wilderness explorer. He knows.
Hell yeah.
It would not work. He would die.
It would totally work. It would totally work. Carl tries to move the house, but it won't budge. Frustrated, he throws one of the chairs off the porch, but the sight of the old wooden object on the ground gives him the idea that he needs. He soon starts throwing all of the old stuff out of the house. And I love the metaphor behind this, the symbolism of him just taking all the old stuff out of the house so he can go on a new adventure and help the kid that's the new stuff. And he throws the last thing he throws out. And the last two things we see are those two chairs that he and Ellie used to sit in. And then, bada bing, bada boom, the house lifts off into the sky. Another knock at the door. He opens it to find Doug. And he said, Doug says, I was hiding under your porch because I love you. Can I stay? And he says, can you stay? Well, you're my dog, aren't you? And I'm your master. And Doug is overjoyed to hear that. He tackles him and starts looking at him. And it's really endearing. Russell catches up to Munce's blimp using a leaf blower, but is immediately confronted by Alpha and the other dogs and taken into custody. Alpha reports back to Munce, Master, the small mailman has returned. Munce spots Carl's house.
Just enough that it keeps being funny and it's not overplayed, and I appreciate that.
Joey, because dogs don't like mailmen. They chase after.
I know.
And they don't have any context for what a wilderness explorer is, so they think he's a mailman. It's hilarious.
And on top of that, like, I don't think we've given enough credit to just how funny looking Russell is. And there's no moment funnier looking than him with the balloons, just like so just sure of himself. He's ready for this. Okay. He's like, I'm attached to the balloons, gets the leaf blower, just starts like going away. It's like, you little shit.
Well, as he's approaching too, he's like almost sitting on the leaf blower like it was like a broom and he's a witch, you know, or it's just like, it's too perfect.
Munce spots Carl's house approaching, so they tie Russell up and slowly open a landing door for him to slide out. Carl spots him and uses the hose zip line to save him. He leaves Russell tied up in the house to keep him safe, and he and Doug sneak into Kevin's holding cell. Carl spots Doug chewing on one of his Walker tennis balls and gets a good idea. He uses it to distract the dogs and then lock them out of the cage so he can save Kevin. Meanwhile, Russell frees himself and accidentally falls out of the house. He catches the hose and then slides very slowly and very graphically across the windows on the bridge of the blimp. And it's funny.
The sound effect is so great too.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
That skin rubbing against glass. And also, he's just the look on Russell's face where he's like, I want this to stop, but I'm wondering if you see this. And Munce's like, I see this.
But cutting from him classic. To Munce, like the him being scared, Munce just being kind of shocked and in awe of it all. It's very good.
Meanwhile, Russell frees himself and Munce launches some planes to shoot him down and corners Carl in the museum room. They fight Munce with the sword, Carl with his walker. And like Carl like double down, like extends his walker. And then both of them throw their backs out. Munce gets the better of Carl, but Doug accidentally shifts the bloom up on the bridge, allowing him and Kevin to escape out to the exterior of the blimp. And they do that scary thing where they crawl, like people actually used to do back in the day, where they crawl on the outside of the blimp and the ladder. And I'm like, what are you doing? Don't do that. That gives me anxiety. It's super scary.
I do want to say that sending out three dog-controlled fighter jets to kill a boy.
Recipe for disaster.
Seems like a recipe for disaster, but also maybe a little bit much. A little bit much. I feel like there might have been a middle ground there.
Alternates. Yeah.
I don't know, Kev. Like, there was no other way to get this to end with little doggy parachutes. So I think they made the right call.
Hilarious. Up on the bridge, Doug outsmarts Alpha and then puts on the cone of shame. And now the other dogs laugh at him. Doug is the new Alpha. And that's hilarious. And they're like, Doug's the new Alpha. He's like, no, I'm not. Yes, I am. I am the new Alpha. There you go. Carl gets Russell hyped. So the little boy finally climbs the hose and then yells squirrel at the dog pilots piloting the plane. So they freak out and crash. They reach the top of the blimp and Doug pops through a hatch while Russell pilots the house to save them. They almost get away, but Munce fires off a shotgun blast at them, downing the house, and it skips off the side of the blimp. Carl holds the house on the precipice via the hose while Munce tries to break into it. He yells to Russell to hold on to Kevin as Munce breaks through the door. Then he screams, Kevin, chocolate, and the bird shoots right past Munce, causing him to rush after them and unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, fall to his death wrapped in a small cluster of balloons.
Very graphic.
Also, Carl doing his best Die Hard impression. So at some point during this, he just ends up in a tank top, and I'm just like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Joey, that's how all good movies end. Carl holds onto the hose, and we think he's originally, at first we think he's holding on the house, but as the camera shifts over, we see the house is no longer attached. Holding on instead is Kevin, Russell, and Doug. He hoists them up, and they all watch as Carl's house disappears into the clouds. And Russell looks up to him and says, "Sorry about your house, Mr. Fredrickson." And Carl says, "You know what? It was just a house." They return, Kevin back to her children, and the birds almost chokes on Carl's cane. So he's like, "You know what? This is the one fly I have with this movie." He almost chokes his cane for the third time. He's like, "You know what? You can have that now." I'm like, "You're going to kill that bird. That bird's not going to be able to cough that thing up. And he's going to die. And you're going to be responsible for it. And the chicks are going to get eaten by tigers."
A little baby's coughing up the tennis balls.
No tigers. Yeah. There you go.
That was a test.
The tennis balls was a good, yeah,
definitely good test.
Cherry on top to that. Like,
you know, look.
I mean, the whole, it was all wet.
Exactly.
Carl and Russell pilot the dirigible back home. And this is another question I have for you guys. They both put on the helmet and goggles. And you're like, are those the helmet and goggles from the dead people?
That's right.
Did you put on a dead man's helmet and goggles? Yep. Is that the right thing to show this kid how to live?
They also killed the man that killed them. So by the property of transferring, it's theirs now. They own it now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it works in the wild.
Do the murders get transferred too, or no?
Yeah, maritime law. No, you don't get stuck with the murder rap. But if you do have any illegal substances on the plane, you can still get pulled over.
Sure,
they're the captain now
because it is your plane now because you took it via murder.
Property
via murder of murder.
Via murder.
Yeah,
sky law.
Bird law. It's the same thing. They call it different bird law. Things, different
a bird lawyer. Back over in the real world, we cut over to the Wilderness Explorer ceremony as a row of children stand with their fathers and get their final pins. But we finally pan over to Russell, and he is all alone. The scout leader tries to bring
also,
it up for a second.
Also, is this whole ceremony immediately after they get back?
Yeah, because he's still 30.
Doesn't look like he's ever taken a shower.
I'm gonna be honest. Kids I have grubby, serious, Joe. Serious issues with this scene right here because it does seem like they've just arrived, but. Mm-hmm. In the crowd is the mom. Now, if we do our math, they've been gone for at least 3 days, possibly even more. We don't know how long it took to get back. So you're telling me the kid's been missing for several days, and the mom was like, "Oh, he'll probably go to this show." Or
fine.
Did she like think that maybe he was dead, and she was like, "Oh, I'm gonna pay homage to him. I'm gonna go to the this." Ceremony.
I'm going to posthumously accept his badge for him.
But there was no badge to be accepted. He, as far as she knew, he hadn't earned the last button thing or the last thing. So what's going on? A lot of confusion, Joey. A lot of confusion.
You got to figure this is, listen, Russell is a handful, right? You got to think on some level, Mama Russell was just like, "I haven't heard that kid in a while." And she's like, the rational part of her brain was like, "We should go looking for him." But the part of her brain that's just been beaten down by this kid's voice over the last 10 years was just like, "Give me one day. I need one day, a glass of cab, maybe some rosé, and just some Netflix. This is what I need right now. If the kid dies, that's God's will." Of course, before the scout leader can ask him if someone is coming for him, Carl nudges his way on the stage and stands right beside him. And he says, "Russell, for assisting the elderly and for performing above and beyond the call of duty, I would like to award you the highest honor I could bestow, the Ellie badge." And with that, he pins the grape soda badge onto Russell's chest. I did not
see this. Why do you do this to us, Pixar?
I did not see this coming when I first saw this, and I was not expecting it. And I was like, "That is rude, Pixar."
Brilliant.
I already cried a bunch of times. I'm now crying again. And
I
then,
think
as
that
if,
I can escape unscathed with one more crying scene, and then they just sucker punch me at the end.
Yep. And then as if that wasn't enough, they go over for ice cream at Fenton's, and they count red and blue cars. And the camera pans up, and as it does so, we see above them is the spirit of adventure, and even higher still is a bunch of clouds that when they part, we see back over in Paradise Falls, Ellie and Carl's house sitting right where it should be on the cliff high above the falls. And that is the end.
Fenton's, a real ice cream place in Oakland. It is fantastic.
Is it?
Okay. Been, I've always wanted to go.
I've
always wanted to go.
We should go. Once all this is over, Kev, let's do it. Let's make a trip. Adventure's out there.
I'm so excited. Red and blue cars.
It's like the design of the thing. They're like, it literally is Fenton's.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Cool as fuck, right?
That's really cool.
So yeah, that is exciting stuff. But now it is time, everybody, for Haiku in Review. Joey, hit the song.
Seven syllables, Joey, Joey. We got nine on the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to sweat it. Joey's got your back. Haiku in Review. Haiku in Review. Everybody, full stop. No, stop.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Just like so who needs Andy did, to write their review in haiku form. Let's see what we got here. Zade Wilson says, watching this after graduating in the midst of this COVID world, it's a small comfort. There's a lot of life to live, adventures out there. Hmm. Well, congratulations there, Zade. Appreciate you
graduating college, right? Right, Zade? Not high school, right?
Either way.
These kids Bill are so young. Marbles
says, up will melt your heart as long as you skip the start. Russell's dad's a shart.
God.
Thank you for getting the word
he
shart.
He's a fucking
idiot.
Shart, man. Yeah. That dude's a shart.
And then, of course, Miscellaneous writes in with the plot in haiku. Very sad open. Already got me moping. Jars and dreams broken. So away he flies. Russell joins him by surprise. Plan must be revised. Now paradise bound. On the way, old Munts is found. So crazy he sounds. Finally on top. Paradise, not what he thought. Small mailman's been caught. In the end, they win, killing Munts, saving Kevin. His final badge, pinned.
That's good.
And Nick, I don't know if you mentioned this, but like one of the final shots of seeing that the house actually just ended up on the mountain where it should be. Mm-hmm. Fucking love it.
It's so
fucking
good.
So good.
That's where he left it.
Oh, yep. Perfect. Beautiful.
I was thinking one step ahead. There was one more question that I had. When they first arrive, they're on that like rocky terrain, right?
Yeah.
And then there's just shots of them in the forest, which is very clearly
they should have just gone all the way around to the thing.
Yeah. So did they occasionally go down into the forest to like take a shit and then go back out to the rocks? That makes no sense. It was it was a huge drop. There's no way they're climbing up and down that.
What I like to think of is they were like, we got 3 days, right? This rock up here, very hard to dig in for the poop holes. What if we just did the thing where we run off the edge and then float down?
Yeah.
And then it was fun. So they just kept running.
How do you go back up? How do you go back up though? Is the problem.
You got to climb. It's just like backwoods skiing, man. You just got to fucking hump that stuff back up the hill and then hope. But also you feel like you're lighter, right?
That was a lot to process.
Yeah.
Hump that stuff back up the hill.
Yeah, you feel like you're lighter because the house is floating you up.
You're right. You have to imagine there's some sort of they jump and float if they wanted to, right?
Absolutely.
Like the chickens in Fortnite, Kev.
Exactly.
Like thank you, Joey. Yeah. Thank you. Just like the chickens in Fortnite.
Just like the chickens in the Legend of Zelda game.
Yeah, I was about to say this. I think it's like a Breath of the Wild situation where it's like the best way to traverse a lot of land, jump off something high with your little glider thingy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what I mean? So perfect. They got that head start there. So getting up, yeah, that's going to be a challenge, but that's a later challenge. Now it's time for Ragu Bagu.
Joey, sing it and I'll say the lines. Go.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Ragu.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Joey's the new Andy Bagu. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk. Bad Guys here for the Pixar Universe. Here at number one, Lotsa from Toy Story 3. Two, The Prospector and Al from Toy Story 2. Newswater and Randall, Monsters, Inc. at number three. Number four, Hopper from Ants. Number five, Syndrome from Incredibles. Number six, Ego and Skinner from Ratatouille. That is Ego as in one's ego. Seven, Darla and the Barracuda and everyone else from Finding Nemo. Eight is Woody and Sid from Toy Story 1. Nine is Gabby from Toy Story 4. 10 is Otto from Kevin. Wally. And then 11 is just the best. And then 11 is Chick and Hubris from Cars. Where do we want to put Munts and his dogs?
I say right below Syndrome, but above Ego. My argument is he's a bad guy. He does bad things. He has a plan that, like, to him, he's not really the bad guy. He's doing it. So he's on the good side of, like, character, but I just think overall it's a little weird. Why is he so old? They don't explain too much. There's some things you can kind of like fill in there or whatever. I mean, but
I think he's very fit. He's probably eating a bunch of superfoods. Nick, you know about this.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's got the Amazon. You got up the yin yang.
Just up the yin yang antioxidants. Sure. Superfoods.
Oh, there you go. All right, we'll pick it. Eddie.
No, what's after Ego?
Ego and Skinner, and then Darla and the Barracuda from Finding Nemo.
Oh, yeah.
I actually feel like I agree exactly with Tim. I think he's on the same level of syndrome because, like, they both kill people indiscriminately, no problem. The difference is syndrome is doing it to, like, further his, like, life and business. And then this guy's just doing it to, like, save his name, you know? So that's a little bit better than – but they're both bad. They're both bad is what I'm saying.
I think number six is a good spot. So we'll put him right at number six underneath Syndrome and above Ego and Skinner. And there you have it.
So now it is time for the Pixar theory with the nanobiologist. There's a recurring theory that every single Pixar movie is connected in some way. Here's the big deep dive red string everywhere theory for where Up fits into the big picture. This one, a little longer than normal, but there's a lot going on here. So first off, we see some sort of giant business with clearly too much money trying to grow the city. While it may sound like business as usual for cities, what big mega corporation could be around at this time? Kevin?
Big and large.
By and large, that is correct. It's not confirmed, but it's believed that the suits are reps of By and Large working on their city ventures, also leading to more pollution in the world. Now that that's established, let's narrow down exactly when Up takes place by using the Pixar movies that take place in a more modern era. Ratatouille takes place a year after 2007, based on the date of Gustave's will, and Nanobiology has actually sent me some attachments to look at, so pictures. No. We don't need to bring them up, but you can believe me here that the date says that. Toy Story 3 takes place in 2010. Up takes place after these two movies. On Andy's dresser in Toy Story 3, he has a postcard from Carl and Ellie. Ellie's still alive in 2010, unless Carl is writing to Andy, signing both of their names to not make him worry. So either that year or several years later, Ellie dies and the events of Up take place.
This we all know how they're connected relationally.
Yeah,
his aunt. Who's the mule, though?
What?
That kicked Andy's dad in the face.
I don't get that joke because I wasn't involved in that. It makes no sense.
All leads to the next key
thing. Don't worry about it, Kevin. It's in Greg Miller.
A point made during Ratatouille.
Was he in Toy Story Review?
Uh-huh. An adventurer heard about the events of the rats in Paris and may have been... Wait, sorry, I got lost here. This all leads to the next key thing, a point I mentioned during Ratatouille. An adventurer heard about the events of the rats in Paris and may have made his own tech to help him. Now I can say his name, Charles Muntz. He may have been in South America, but he still has communication devices. I'm sure that some big story, like rats are more intelligent than we think, would make its way to him by international radio. Charles then, with his knowledge, invented the collars for his dogs that let him speak English, but also in a way made them more intelligent. After Up, the dogs are set free, but what if they use this heightened intelligence to start making some kind of society with other non-human intelligent life using this tech? Then 40 years later, after more pollution, they try to wage war on humans for ruining the planet. Up is the last step that leads to the supposed war between humans and the other intelligent life on Earth. One of the last pieces leading to the humans' departure in the beginning moments of WALL-E. I will say, all this stuff, it is starting to make more sense, and it does.
Why is there a war, though?
I've never heard of the war. Like, I really hope
nanobiologist is making certain parts up about this. But yeah.
Like, how many things can I sneak in before they call me out on making this up?
The tree that they like to go and, like, lay on looks a lot like the tree from A Bug's Life, right?
Bug's Life.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, you're right.
Pretty cool. You think about that, so Tim?
It could be. I haven't thought about that.
Her tears. Yeah. May have done something to the ants. You know what I mean?
It caused rain. The rain.
Yeah. Also, is an ant rain. She looks like a lot like Invisigirls. Or no, is that Elastigirls? She looks like Elastigirl. Could that have been her mom? I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there.
Or a distant cousin. Sticks.
We're not doing the Pixar theory with Kevin. Kevin's just making up things. Maybe. I don't know.
Did you see them? Did you see them? Joey, you know what I'm talking about? They look a lot alike. You think about that?
I don't disagree, but like they also kind of look a little bit generic. Like there, Joey, so there's not like a ton of defining
but
features.
But Joey, hold on a second.
Like she didn't stretch her arm out all willy-nilly or anything.
Both those women, both those women look a lot like, that's right, Andy's mom. Google it.
Andy's mom, like Andy. Just a kid.
Do you think that these are all just women with brown hair?
Yes. The Pixar movies currently, and we don't have the pretty rankings because Andy's not here. But number one, Monsters, Inc. Number two, Finding Nemo. Number three, The Incredibles. Number four, Wall-E. Number five, Toy Story 3. Number six, Toy Story 2. Number seven, Toy Story 4. Number eight, Toy Story. Number nine, Ratatouille. Number 10, Cars. And number 11, A Bug's Life. Now, I would like to start this off with a double whammy of information.
Okay.
Thing number one is Andy Cortez's vote. Andy Cortez puts this at number eight above Ratatouille.
What? He doesn't know love. Let's move on. Let's move on.
Below number eight?
He's just mad about Wall-E last week.
Yeah, I know.
It's what it is. It is. Again, he has
every right to be mad.
Nothing but praise for the movie. Nothing but praise. Fantastic movie. Pixar movies are great, period. I'm coming in. It's number one. My argument is, I personally feel the Toy Story movie should be higher, specifically Toy Story 3. But where our rankings are at, it is in my heart that I feel like this movie is the most quintessential. What am I looking for from Pixar? They deliver all of it. I think that some of the Kevin plot is a little weird. I think that Charles Muntz as a villain works, but isn't always the best. Having said that, doesn't fucking matter. It is so good. It makes you feel. And anytime it's like about to be a cheap shot, they always take it one or two steps further to really, really mean something special. So it's number one for me.
Tim, I would like to let you know a little secret. I didn't listen to the list this week because it doesn't matter. This movie's number one in my heart. And that's where it needs to go. Number one.
I'm going to come in and say that I agree. I think when you think of Pixar movies, you think of heavy, emotionally resonant movies. And I think Toy Story and Up are like cream of the crop in those aspects. So I would also put it at one.
Nick Scarpino.
The deciding vote. Oh, the power. I don't think I can put this number one.
You did the math wrong. Just a heads up. Your vote actually doesn't matter.
Yeah, your vote doesn't matter.
Right. It's going to go number one. That's right.
So you don't,
I forgot, Andy,
an agenda at this point. You can
there you go. Just put it number one then.
I want to hear where you put it. Where would you put it?
I would put it right above Wall-E. I like this movie a lot. I think the emotional, the B story is the strength of it, though. I think the A story is kind of boring, and I don't necessarily want to, like, I don't watch this again and think, oh, this is a really, really entertaining movie like I do with the top three that we have up there right now. It's like Monsters, Inc. is always the light to go back to. Incredibles, always the light to go back to. This movie is beautifully made, but it is, I think, it just tugs on those heartstrings so hard with the B story that I wish the A story could back that up a little bit. Not to say the A story is not fun, but it's just not as compelling as I think it needed to be to be number one. So I would put it right above Wall-E, wherever that is. Thing number three? Number four? Is that number four?
The new ranking is number one, Up. Number two, Monsters, Inc. Number three, Finding Nemo. Number four, The Incredibles. Number five, Wall-E. Number six, Toy Story 3. Number seven, Toy Story 2. Number eight, Toy Story 4. Number nine, Toy Story. Number 10, Ratatouille. Number 11, Cars. And number 12, A Bug's Life. We are going to return in a couple days with the 1990 Ninja Turtles movie, and I fucking can't wait. I have not seen this in probably 20 years, and I can't wait for that. And then after that, we are returning next week with Pixar in Review with Cars 2.
Another one I've never seen.
I've never seen either.
I don't know that I've ever seen it either.
Well, I think I've seen the beginning.
I don't think I've seen any of it. They go to France,
I've
right?
I've never seen it all either. I saw some of it, and I was like, you know what? I'm done. But
wow. I feel like I have also had similar thoughts.
I'm excited. I'm excited to give it a fair shake. I'm going to go in. I'm just going to go in. We'll see you next week. Anyways, I love it. Love you guys. Goodbye.